This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My name is Alan Scott. This is the place where government actions come face-to-face with business decisions, online at www.bgov.com, and of course on the air right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And it's that time of year again. That's right. People call it the most wonderful time of the year. Kids are packing up, going back to school. You got Congress back in session, and agencies who do work with the contracting world are now examining their books to see if they actually met their goals. And guess what? They probably haven't. So the small business obligations that they committed to last year, there's a big dash right now to spend some cash going on. Here to explain the race to the finish in their latest piece are quantitative analysts Duncan Amos and Evan Krohn, along with senior budget analyst Cameron Luthy. Guys, how are you?
Great to be here, Alan.
So they plan for this every year, yet they never, ever, ever spend the appropriate amount of money. September rolls around and they're like, uh-oh. Why does this happen, Evan?
You know, these are goals that they've negotiated with the Small Business Association,
sure.
But administration, I mean. But they just don't hit it. They're not really enforceable. They're not binding in any way. They just, they are aspirational, and some of them view it as that, and some of them hit it, but many of them view it as aspirational.
Do they, so there's no penalty at all, Cameron, if they don't hit this?
Well, here's the thing.
Or is it just a black mark on their record?
It is, and the more frequently you get that black mark, the more likely you're going to get scrutiny. Scrutiny from senior levels in the administration, but particularly from Capitol Hill, from the small business committees in the House and Senate. They're paying attention, and they do keep track. They keep a scorecard. They know who's naughty and nice, to get with your wonderful time of the year metaphor. Duncan has looked at which agencies do well consistently vis-a-vis the goals and which don't.
Perfect segue. Duncan, why don't you fill us in?
So what we looked at is that it's not necessarily where these agencies are related to their goal, but really where the historical spending is. So if you think about it, maybe one agency is $100 million behind their goal, but if you look at that, they always miss their goal. They might be right on target for where they're historically hitting. So of the 14 agencies that have not hit their goals yet, there's kind of a mix of some agencies that we know are going to miss, so it's not really worth looking at, or we know that some of these historically do meet this historical average, and they're still below that. So we can really look at them as potentials for partnering agencies.
Okay, so let's dive into that just a little bit. And I'm looking at this September spending spree, more pronounced for small businesses in your analysis here. It's very apparent that September, there's a gigantic boost in spending going on.
Yeah, there definitely is. I think there's two stories on this. The first is that Q4 is really all about September, and I think that sometimes gets lost. People talk about Q4 spending spree, fourth quarter, but it's really all about September. I mean, you look at it across all contracts, they spend about 2.4 times the normal amount that they do in every other month. So big, big boost in spending. But the other thing to note is that this is also where they pick up serious dollars in small business obligations, because you look at it as well, small business, they actually spend 3.5 times normal or the typical month in September. So they're actually gaining ground on their small business goals overall. So this is where they're looking to spend it.
So what can people who are meeting those who fit the criteria that these agencies are looking to spend money in, what can they do to better A, spread the wealth throughout the year? Is that a possibility? Or B, step up and get Congress or somebody who's overviewing all of this to go, hey, look, you got to spend this money throughout the year, or are they looking at it as a windfall every fourth quarter, beginning of the fourth quarter?
Well, the problem is as much political as it is effort on the part of the executive branch agencies, because if you think about it, right, the Congress didn't get around to passing full year funding until March 27th.
Yeah.
So that means that agencies in many cases were holding back putting money on contract until halfway through the year.
So that's
and
the excuse.
Then, and then, but wait, there's more.
Okay.
the agencies in many cases didn't get exactly what they asked for, and so they had to come back to Congress with a spend plan to show them how they would spend the money after sequester was implemented. So you have the additional wrinkle of sequester this year, which again adds to contributes to pushing the spending to late in the year and particularly into September. So to be fair to the federal agencies, they were under some particularly problematic circumstances this year.
We come back to Congress. One of the first things they're going to take a look at is a continuing resolution. Are we looking at the same issue moving in next year?
If you had to bet, yes.
Okay.
I mean, this is the new normal, right? Civilian agencies for about 10 years have been dealing with at least several months of CRs to start the year, with the exception of maybe VA and Homeland Security. What's new over the last 3 years is now defense is in the same boat, having to wait for its money. So you now have what is the new normal of federal agencies having to wait until at least Christmas, if not springtime, right, before they get their money. And so to some degree, this is unavoidable. So the real challenge is for both small businesses and for federal agencies who want to push money to small businesses, how do you deal with the new normal?
You're listening to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests right now are quantitative analyst Evan Krohn, Duncan Amos, and senior budget analyst Cameron Luthy, and we're discussing the race to the finish, an outlook for small business spending. Will the president ever get involved in something like this?
I mean, I think it's a possibility. I mean, there's been some rhetoric out of this administration that they do want to increase involvement of small businesses and especially disadvantaged businesses in these kind of markets. But I mean, as Cameron and Duncan have mentioned, historically we've missed these goals every year. So it's hard to say whether there's going to be a really significant change in behavior, maybe without that kind of action. But it's hard to say whether that's really a priority right now.
Duncan, give me a little bit more about the breakdown. These charts here completely mm-hmm. fascinate me as we take a look at this analysis here. Fiscal 2013 mm-hmm. Business goals and actuals with historical averages. There are obvious trends mm-hmm. here. Give me an idea of who the good ones are and who the bad ones are.
Absolutely. So the SBA, the Small Business Administration, tracks 33 different agencies. And as I said, I think 14 of them have not hit their goals this year. But if you look at some scatter plots of 2012 and 2011, and you can kind of line them up to see what agencies consistently exceed or hit their goals and ones that always miss. And what you can really think about is these are good agencies to part with, maybe in FY14, because you know that they are a good partner. So examples include the Department of State, the GSA, the Treasury Department. They always are hitting their goals.
Right.
Examples of ones that aren't always so good or consistent include a lot of the DOD agencies, such as the Navy, the Air Force. Now, the flip side to that is even though they aren't hitting their goals, it's still a lot more money, just because the DOD tends to be spending a lot more money.
Sure.
While they might be a less reliable partner, there's a big pot of money there still.
You know, you could throw out the top ones and the low ones and mm-hmm. just kind of look at the middle point. Those guys mm-hmm. are being rewarded for being average, let's say.
Exactly.
Those who are maybe spending more, are they also smacked on the wrist because they're not giving the money to the big guys who don't meet that criteria?
I don't think that usually happens, and I'll tell you why. Because the government is trying to reach an overall goal as mm-hmm. well. So they need those agencies who are doing more than their share
okay.
with small business in order to get to the total goal for the entire executive branch.
Cameron, you've been around this for a long time. This is something that you were born and bred to be doing this your entire life. So let's talk about...
My mother weeps.
She's still crying today. Is this typical? Are we looking at something that has been going on forever?
Yeah, in a way, but I think there are some things that are different, that are new, that are changing, that I think are relevant here. One of the things that Evan and Duncan and I talked about is the degree to which agencies, particularly in the Defense Department, have shifted towards multiple award contracts, where you'll have teams made up of, say, a large prime and a mid-sized company and three smalls on a particular contract. And then there'll be more than one team.
Sure.
And then each of these multiple award contracts does business through task orders or delivery orders, right?
Right.
So on each task order, there's a competition. Now, that didn't used to be the case. These multiple award contracts, sometimes This is a newer phenomenon if you think about it. If you go back to the early 2000s, there was a lot of sole source awards, non-competitive. You had certain companies who were just lapping up the gravy with, sure, you know, task order after task order. So that's changing. The other thing that I think is important here for small business is, while the data that we're looking at is prime contract revenue, right, obligations for primes, there's also money to be had in that subcontractor role for small business. And there's plenty of opportunity to team with larger mm-hmm. firms.
Actually, to add on to that, and Evan or Cameron, correct me if I'm getting the details wrong, but the SBA runs this small business mentor protege program, which the whole idea is to teach these small businesses how to partner with larger primes so they can get either prime contracts down the road or then get subcontracting opportunities.
The race to the finish, it's definitely begun at this point. Duncan, what bits of advice would you pass along to that would-be contractor trying to get some money that's available now?
Well, if you're thinking about the future, I think look to the past to see what agencies that you know you can demonstrate a capability to and that they consistently hit their goals, so you know they're going to do that in the future too.
So I'm going to steal one from probably what Cameron would say, which is you know, make sure as you go into the new year that you're on the contract vehicles that you think a lot of the work in the beginning of the year are going to flow through. Because as we hit potential CR, it's going to be hard to have new starts, which means probably no new contracts. So the more you can sort of evaluate where you are right now, the better you'll be heading into the first quarter.
Stay close to your counterparts, both in large companies with whom you team and with the contracting shops in the government agencies you're doing work with today. It's too late to branch out into new waters. Stick with what you know. Stick with what you're good at. Stick with stay as close as possible to the customer.
The piece is called The Race to the Finish, An Outlook for Small Business Spending. Their names are Duncan Amos, Evan Crone, and Cameron Luthy, the man who brought us Lapping Up Task Orders Like Gravy. I'm going to write that down and remember it forever, as you should as well. Guys, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Alex.
You're listening to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And we're going to shift gears just a little bit and talk about transportation, specifically transportation by bus. You see, last year, bus travel was the fastest growing of all the travel industries, with departures of up to 7.5%, up 7.5%, that is. Over 1,000 trips daily, the most in 4 years, this according to a DePaul University study. The regulations, however, that are designed to protect the drivers and the riders and to promote safety in the industry are being skirted by some bus owners through some little-known loopholes in the system. Here with an amazing article on this now growing issue is Bloomberg News reporter Jeff Plunges. Jeff, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. You know, I see buses all the time, all over the roads, and this is now scary, having read this. This story has now put it into perspective because you start off talking about it in New York. The article, by the way, is called Tough to Kill, New York Buses Drive Through U.S. Law Loopholes, just recently released. It points out a growing trend.
The bus industry is growing rapidly, as you said. There's a real resurgence in bus travel.
It's cheap. It's easy.
It's cheap and easy. Chinatown buses really opened a lot of people's eyes.
Right.
They created a new business model, so you can go from Washington to New York or New York to Boston for $20. Now it's more like $30. But just a lot of people who wouldn't have ridden the bus 10 or 15 years ago are getting back on. And what we found in this article is it's not just the inner city buses, but there are a lot of more specialized buses that are cropping up. The particular company we looked at is called Onboard Tours. It is a sightseeing bus company. And
so they say.
Well, they're hard to pin down.
Right.
But the basic business that they do is they have created specialized package tours, and they transport people around on shuttle buses, mm-hmm. which are the kinds of things that you would see at airports, you know, rental car companies. So they seat 20 to 30 people. And this particular company was in the news back in April when the U.S. Transportation Department shut it down for safety violations, including, hiring drivers who had failed their drug test and then lying about it when regulators were auditing them.
So this is a company that got tours running in New York. They've also got tours running in D.C., owned by a gentleman by the name of, or I should say the principal, is Houston lawyer Thomas C. Schmidt. Maybe that's one of the ways he's getting around this. He is a lawyer and knows how to talk his way out of this, out of the issues that are in front of him.
He is a lawyer, and we discovered that he really knows the law,
right?
As you would expect him to. But he has successfully found some gray areas and really played regulators off of each other. And he says he's not covered by federal law because he keeps his buses within the boundaries of New York State.
Right.
But then there's another loophole where sightseeing buses in New York State are regulated by the city, by New York City. And so he's had this situation where state regulators have been tipped off that there are problems with his buses, and the state regulators come back to the people who are complaining and saying, well, actually, that's a city problem. And then the city has tried to crack down on him for operating without a license. And what has happened is he's challenged the city in a hearing. And we came across this rather extraordinary transcript where the city inspector who was testifying brought the wrong brochure to the hearing. So he was kind of let off there. And now the city doesn't think he's a sightseeing bus company.
This is, and you've basically summed up what Deborah Hirschman has said, chairman of the U.S. National Transportation Safety Board. And I quote, "They're regulating an amorphous industry with moving targets like a game of whack-a-mole," which is basically what he's playing. And he's a master at it at this point. Give us an idea of, obviously, he's come up against some hurdles at some point that he's had to overcome. He's done a couple of things here, which you've outlined. Let's talk about the idea of reincarnation, bus reincarnation.
Right.
What is this? How does it work? And why is it a way to skirt the law?
It is so easy to start a bus company in this country. All you really need is a bus, an insurance policy, and you need to fill out an online application to get what is known as DOT operating authority. And they basically give you operating authority on the spot, and then they do an audit within a few months to make sure you are following the rules.
Right.
But unlike the FAA, where an airline passenger can be very well assured that that plane has been thoroughly inspected and tested, and there are numerous redundant regulations that really keep people safe to an extraordinary degree. You get on a bus, you do not have that assurance. All you know is that there's a bus. And the government...
It may or may not have internet. There you go.
I mean, there are so many more bus companies than airlines.
Right.
There's so many more trucking companies than bus companies, even. And the small agency that oversees this is known as the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. And they don't have enough inspectors to go out every day and look at these buses and trucks. In this case, Mr. Schmidt, you know, was singled out. He has, as you said, he's a Houston lawyer,
right?
But he's become kind of a bus magnate. And he has these sightseeing companies in New York, Washington, and Las Vegas. He's trying to start them in other cities like Los Angeles. In Washington, as we said in April, he got shut down with this very toughly worded order, which not only applied to his Washington company, but him personally.
Right.
And the reason was they've had this problem with reincarnated carriers. And what we have seen in dozens of cases in recent years is that the regulators will attempt to get tough on someone they know is skirting the rules, and they will shut down the company. And then within days, the company will just file for a new DOT number and be back on the road. And they have even caught companies repainting their buses. You know, the same buses, they just repaint them, put a new name on the side, or just paint them white, and they're back on the road. And so what the regulators have done is try to write these orders tougher and tougher.
Right.
And in this case, they really singled out Tom Schmidt personally because they knew he had related businesses.
Right.
And so in Washington, he's been able to stay on the road, and it appears legally, by hiring another company to run the buses for his tours with their own drivers and their own buses. And that appears to be okay with federal regulators. In New York, he's got a different problem.
Right.
Where his company was actually shut down by federal regulators 2 years ago, but never went off the road. He claims that the federal government doesn't have authority over him because he stays within New York state boundaries.
Right.
But if you look at this order that was issued in April, it applies to him personally running any sort of bus operation interstate or intrastate. And that appears to be his real problem right now.
You brought up an interesting point. And by the way, you're listening to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, where my guest right now is Jeff Plungis. He's a reporter with Bloomberg News. Tough to kill New York bus drive through U.S. loopholes. The story of buses that are basically not fit to be on the road, or drivers that are not fit to be driving them, and how bus owners have skirted these loopholes to keep those buses running, whether they be repainted or, no, he really didn't fail his drug test, he's okay. You brought up an interesting question, an interesting point, that is. Airlines have paid hundreds of millions of dollars every year on airline maintenance to follow the rules and such. Let's say I'm Mr. Airline owner and I say, I only fly within the state of Maryland, or I only fly within the state of Virginia. Could I cry the same thing?
I am not as familiar with the aviation laws, but I do not believe there are intrastate airlines.
Okay.
And that's, I think that's, as far as buses go, that's one of the real public policy questions that we have raised in this article. And I know that regulators have talked about this in the past, but I mean, the basic question is, if you're an interstate bus company, you go across state lines and you're shut down, and the federal regulators have determined that you have some substantial safety problems, mm-hmm. and they've declared you a imminent hazard to public safety, which is what they did in this case, can that same company come back the next day and reform itself as an intrastate bus company? You know, is that okay? We didn't really get a clear answer from the regulators on that, and that's something we'll be looking at. But I will say that I know that this issue has come up in some really nasty bus crashes.
Well, it's sad to say, but obviously it's issues like that that will get the ball rolling.
You know, I should say that this issue is on the front burner for the U.S. Transportation Department, in part because of all these crashes.
Right.
I put the spotlight on it. Ray LaHood, the recent transportation secretary, mm-hmm. Up until a couple months ago, made this one of his high priorities. That's why this particular company that we looked at was so troubling to us, because this was the first company the government tried to shut down in their current wave of getting tough on the bus industry.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens as this continues to evolve, and I know that you'll keep your finger on the pulse of the situation and come back and update us.
I would be very happy to do that.
Very good. His name is Jeff Plungis. Look for Tough to Kill New York Buses Drive Through U.S. Laws Loopholes.
Thank you.
For BGov's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, I'm Alan Scott.